Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. It's Friday, March 27th, 2020. Every week, we check in with Publishers Weekly for the latest news on books and reading. Today, Andrew Albanese, PW senior writer, joins me from his home office in New York City. Welcome to the program, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So, Andrew, we have to just add to the news headlines about the coronavirus this week. Many breathtaking developments in that crisis around the world, and the publishing industry responses dominates our news for the program this week. However, let's open with the question everyone asks these days. How are you, Andrew? You and yours doing well?
I am okay. My family is okay. We're working from home here with two kids in remote school, digital school, which is a challenge, but I think we're rising to it. I have to say the public school teachers here in New York City have done incredible work putting together what is a full digital school day. And they did it in like a week's time. So if I can claim a point of privilege here, teachers are underpaid and public education needs to be better funded. And if you didn't know that before, well, now you know. Thank you, New York City teachers, for all that you've done. Anyway, we are getting by here. Though homeschool does require my wife and I to be, you know, IT department specialists and schoolmasters, as well as parents, and also trying to do our jobs here. But still, it's been really something to see. And one of the things that I've realized through this all is that digital really is ready for prime time. You know, thanks for asking about us. You know, I think this is the way we should start every conversation because, you know, we're going to get talking about some business related stuff and a lot of things regarding this crisis. We don't want to lose sight of the fact that this really is all about people. We know that. It's good to acknowledge that. And I think a lot about the people who have lost loved ones, who are in the hospital now, and people who are just scared, wondering what's going to happen, whether they're going to lose their jobs, whether they're going to get sick. And of course, I think about my friends like you and Jeremy. So I trust you're okay too, Chris?
I am doing just fine, Andrew. Thanks for asking. My situation in Boston is pretty much like yours in New York City and in Paris and Madrid, at least for the healthy among us. If you need to speak with me, my best days for that are Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. So now to the news on the book business. Let's start with a surprising report regarding book sales.
Yeah, so I'm surprised, but also pretty encouraged to report that after falling 10% between March 7th and March 14th, print unit sales of books were flat in the week that ended March 21. So we didn't lose anything this week. That is certainly good news. This, of course, is according to NPD BookScan, which measures about 85% of print book sales. So does that mean we found the floor here? Well, probably not. Remember, you know, the response to this pandemic is still in its early days, despite our president's wish that we all just get back to work by Easter. And more than likely, this stabilization is, you know, some places got going early on their stay-in-place policies. But, you know, more of those policies are coming for sure. I'm absolutely certain of that. But nevertheless, this is good news. It's better than the alternative. Flat is certainly better than going down. And when we get a look at the ebook numbers, the news may be even a little more encouraging. So let's hope.
What kind of books were driving those sorts of sales numbers?
Well, as you know, someone with two kids at home, I know that there was a huge gain in unit sales in juvenile nonfiction that helped to offset declines in adult nonfiction and juvenile fiction. In fact, I think print sales of adult fiction were up, which was nice to see. But there was a 66% jump this week in juvenile nonfiction sales. And that was led by education, reference, language. Sales soared, I think, 186% over the previous week. So thank you, digital school. And of course, sales of games and activities and hobbies rose by like 100%, 117%, I think the number was, because you can't just give iPad to your kids all the time, right? And then there was a gain in adult fiction that was driven by a 26% increase in the suspense and thriller segment and a 17% improvement in the science fiction genre. And that also makes sense because, you know, we need to learn how to survive our new dystopian reality.
Indeed, we will have to get our advice from Isaac Asimov. But meanwhile, on the conference side of the trade, even as Book Expo organizers rescheduled the show for July in New York, publishers continue to drop out.
Yeah, so Book Expo is still set for a late edition. We'll call it, you know, a late edition anyway at the Javits in July. But Here's what we know about that. The major publishers are pretty much not planning to be there. HarperCollins and Hachette were the latest to drop out this week. And right now, the Javits Center is being transformed into a hospital. Now, things could change, and that would be wonderful. But it's not looking good. As we here in New York City, as you may have heard in the news, really are at the epicenter of this outbreak. The prediction is, things are going to get worse before they get better.
The American Library Association, however, has announced it is canceling its annual conference set for the end of June. Clearly, they didn't want to wait to see how the crisis evolves, even though their annual conference is 3 months away.
Yeah, and I think we should take a moment to praise ALA for making this decision right now. For one, I think it's a stark reminder and a needed reminder that we are still in the early stages of this battle to contain the COVID-19 outbreak. Despite the failure of the President of the United States to grasp that fact, we've got a ways to go here, I'm afraid. The fact is that in June, if anything, librarians are going to be hopefully trying to get their buildings back open and their communities back to a semblance of normal life, though I personally don't expect normalcy to return by the end of June, if I'm being honest. And let's also take this as a sign of the gravity of the moment we're facing. This is going to be the first time in 75 years that the ALA has not hosted an annual conference. The last cancellation was in 1945 as World War II was winding down. Just let that sink in for a minute.
Indeed, it's really dramatic. And as you report on publishersweekly.com, this could not have been an easy decision to make for ALA, which depends on the revenue from its annual conference.
Yeah, I mean, it really is incredible that ALA Executive Director Tracy D. Hall just began her job a month ago. And in that time, she's already had to reveal that ALA is in the midst of a cash crunch, and now it's got to cancel its annual conference on which they depend for revenue. Well, welcome aboard, Tracy Hall. It's not an easy time for the ALA for sure. But I have to say, this is what leadership looks like. And I say, well done. The ALA made a very swift decision and issued a really thoughtful statement stating that ALA's priority is the health and safety of the library community, ALA members, staff, supporters, vendors, volunteers, and the health of the city of Chicago, where the conference was due to be held. Leaders make tough choices, and this was a tough choice. But I also think it was the obvious right choice, which probably still doesn't make it any easier.
Well, clearly it is a blow for ALA, but also for publishers and authors as well, isn't it?
It really is. The ALA conference, which usually often draws, depending on where it is, more than 20,000 attendees and hundreds of publishers and vendors, it always features a robust program of authors and provides a really important opportunity for publishers to launch new titles in front of an influential audience. The 2018 ALA conference in New Orleans, for example, hosted the first appearance by a little-known author, Michelle Obama. You might have heard of her in connection with her then yet unreleased memoir, Becoming. And if you need a sign of how important the conference is to publishers and other vendors who support ALA, the ALA press release announcing the cancellation features statements from a number of publishers and other vendors right there in the release, including EBSCO, Follett, Baker & Taylor, Gale Cengage, HarperCollins, Overdrive, Penguin Random House, ProQuest, Simon & Schuster, and more. But I'm going to point to what Gale Senior VP Paul Gazzolo said. He applauded ALA for making this difficult decision quickly. And I'll add my applause to that too. It's hard for us here at PW too, and I'm sad about there not being an ALA this year, but it was the right call, and it was a great decision to make that call right now.
So we have talked about book sales earlier and then libraries, and now we can talk about both together. In Monday's issue of PW, you have a story on how the digital library market is surging in the wake of this virus.
Oh, it's really something. Yeah, that's right. Those libraries around the U.S. are shuttering their physical locations to battle this outbreak of COVID-19. They are rapidly transferring budget dollars to ebooks and digital audio and other services so they can continue to serve their communities. And the result could be a watershed moment, librarians tell me, because it might finally accelerate a shift to digital reading that's been unfolding very slowly and, as listeners to this show will no doubt know, contentiously for more than a decade. I'll give you the major beats of the story, but basically every library I checked in with reported the same thing: closed buildings and massive digital spends. The spending on digital resources, completely unprecedented, PW columnist Brian Kenny told me. And Brian, of course, is the director of a library, the White Plains Public Library here in New York State. Now, White Plains shut down its building on March 14th. It also ceased ordering all physical materials. And Brian says that they're now taking the remaining funds for the rest of this fiscal year, which ends on June 30th. It's about $150,000, and spending that budget almost entirely on ebooks and digital audio. And that, he says, is happening at other libraries. Librarians he knows are reporting the same thing. Libraries big and small throughout the country are pretty much doing the same thing. Now, Overdrive, of course, is the leading digital provider for libraries, and I talked to their CEO, Steve Potash, this week, who told me that every day for the last week, the company has posted a new record. How'd you like to have that in normal times for your business, right? But every day, record days for checkouts, record days for circulation, record days for holds, every day a new record for the number of first-time users, for the number of downloads and installation of Overdrive's app, the Libby app. This is interesting to me because it's been a contentious 18 months. It's been a contentious decade, really, when you think about it. But over the last 18 months, all of the big five publishers have raised prices and imposed new restrictions on digital lending and public libraries. And now this crisis has prompted a number of these publishers to relax those lending terms, at least for the short term. You know, the most prominent change, of course, came on March 17, when Macmillan abandoned its controversial embargo on new release ebooks. And now Macmillan says it's even going to lower prices on select titles.
We have been doing this podcast, Andrew, for going on 9 years, if you can believe it. And library lending throughout that time has been a tense subject between libraries and publishers. So do you think that's about to change?
You know, maybe. And all it took was a global pandemic, right? But the librarians that I spoke to told me that we're certainly going to get at least some good data about what digital lending can do for publishers. And I think they're right. But I think Brian Kenny really hit the nail on the head. He told me that his library is now providing virtual reference service for 30 hours a week. They've licensed Zoom, and they're going to be rolling out 20 virtual programs in April, from book discussions to story times and other workshops. His library has completely revamped its website. So when you go there now, it's all digital stuff, right? They're highlighting their digital content. Then they're pushing that content out in 2 e-newsletters a week, one for adults and one for kids, that are filled with recommendations for what you can read or listen to or view. And people are responding, he says. I'll quote him here. He says, "We are bringing a lot of people online, and it's turning out to be a good experience for them. My guess is that many of them are going to want to stay there."
Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer. That's it for this week on Beyond the Book. Thanks for joining me, and stay out of trouble.
My pleasure, as always.
Up next on Beyond the Book, over the next 2 years, EU member states are required to adopt the Directive on Copyright in the Digital Single Market. The directive provides a clear and explicit formulation of the legal status of copying materials for text and data mining. As Duncan Campbell of Wiley tells me, these provisions mean publishers must maintain clean, reliable metadata for their content.
I'm a real believer in having, you know, infrastructure and standards that kind of enable better and quicker, more effective uses and reuses of content. And I think that metadata is a crucial component of that. I'm a researcher, and I've downloaded some PDF files of articles to my desktop, and I'd like to upload them to a platform. You know, at what point do I know whether I have the rights to upload that? Do I know which article version I'm uploading? And so it's really important for us as an industry to be tagging articles with things like, you know, which article version of it? Is it author manuscript? Is it accepted? Is it the version of record? And also what license applies to that piece of content, so it can be understood whether it can be used and reused. And that also applies in the sort of downstream licensing for things like text and data mining.
Get fit for licensing, healthy metadata, and the EU Copyright Directive. Next on Beyond the Book. For a complete schedule of virtual programming from Copyright Clearance Center, originally intended for London Book Fair presentations, please visit copyright.com/LBF2020. Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. Subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. The complete Beyond the Book podcast archive is available at beyondthebook.com. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening, and join us again soon on CCC's Beyond the Book.